I am very passionate about solving one thing in the world, which is making sure that people who are working on social media are seeing the value of what they do.
Emrik, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Alessandro. Paris to New York today.
Yes, I know. I know. It's cold. It's very cold. I every single year I forget how cold it becomes in January, February, March, up until April, and but it's, you know, pros and cons of the city. Yeah, you know, like I wanted to just start, as I do with the majority of the guests, just to know a bit more about yourself. And we do use this sort of, like, you know, mapping, of course called map, where you tell us a bit more, you know, about yourself, with three main topics and items. There are the mission, so what do you aim to achieve? Your achievements already, right? So anything that in your life or, you know, business side, anything that you're like very like proud of, and your purpose. So why do you do what you do?
Mission and purpose are going to be quite close together because they are very intertwined. I am very passionate about solving one thing in the world, which is making sure that people who are working on social media are seeing the value of what they do. And we've seen too many people doing social media and being perceived by their peers or by their customers, if they're an agency, or by other people around them, like, yeah, you're just having fun playing on Facebook all day and what you do is not really work. And you don't really bring value. You know, we'd rather go with talk to the guys who are doing paid advertising or email marketing or marketing automation, because these guys are the real business makers. And we don't think this should be true. And we want to change that and make social media work, feel useful and valuable for the business. So that's the mission and the purpose at the same time.
Do you have any achievements also that you want to share with us in the past years that you...
Yeah, the achievement is kind of related to the number of people we have in the company. So we grew the business from zero to 20 plus million euros annual recurring revenue, which is the metric you use for SaaS companies, for software recurring revenue companies. And we did 175 people across, I think it's 20 countries, something like that now. And we did all of that without raising money, which is one of our big achievement and big pride, because most companies in our space, they've raised tremendous amount of money.
Totally. And in fact, I wanted to ask you this, you know, so you're bootstrapped, you got to this, like, you know, huge number of people, you know, starting from, like, you know, as you said, like, not zero, from scratch. What are the top strategies that made that journey so successful so far, on the one hand, and on the other, any challenging moment, and how did you, you know, overcome that?
There are two conditions to grow any company, but especially a bootstrap company with very little money and very little means. Number one, it's freaking passion for the problem you solve. Because what you're going to go through is so hard that if you're not really passionate about solving the problem and finding solutions to it, you're going to be discouraged very quickly. And you're never going to grow to 20 million without raising money. So really love what you do and love the problem you solve and the people you solve it to. And the second thing is, as you have that passion, have that fire in your belly and going through that road, that journey, it is constantly adapt to new situations. I mean, our business today has nothing to do with our business 5 years ago, which itself had nothing to do with our business 5 years before. And, you know, when we launched AgoraPulse in 2012, our product was only about running Facebook contests and promotions. So it was only on Facebook and it was only contests and promotions. Nothing to do whatsoever with what the product is today. And all of that is all constantly being awake and adapting to, okay, this doesn't work. Let's change this. Let's move away from this. Let's move to that. Let's look at the market. Who do we sell to? Where do we add value? What do we need to change to add more value to those we're already selling to? And the company that succeed are the company that evolve the fastest.
In addition to that, I guess that you're also like a remote company.
We are semi-remote because our tech and product, so in our engineers and our product people, they're all, mostly all in our Paris office. But okay. Sales, support, customer success, and marketing, they're all over the world, and most of them are remote.
And which are the qualities that you look for, you know, again, you know, being remote, like semi-remote, as you said, so having this sort of balance, what are the things that you look the most when it comes to individuals joining your company?
Great communicators. If you don't hear from people, it's probably that they're not doing much. And if they are doing much and not communicating about it, they're not doing a good job. So it's when people are constantly going up to you and presenting you what they do, presenting you with their questions and their challenges and the help they need. You're usually feeling like, wow, it's great working with that person. I love having that person in my team. When you don't have that, meaning that what you deal with is silence and anxiety, or what are they doing today? usually not good. Even if they work, and that's the sad truth about that, they may be working hard, but be very bad about proactively going upward and communicating about it or asking questions about it. The perception they're going to create is not going to be great. So some people are not designed for remote work because they don't know how to do that. Those people are better off in an office environment, because in the office, that communication will happen organically, where in a remote condition, it has to happen proactively. It's not going to happen organically. So communication is number one. Number two is really people who raise their hand when they see something and they say, I'm seeing a problem here. I'm proposing this. What do you think? Versus, I'm seeing a problem here. I'm going to wait until someone sees the same problem and come to me and propose me a solution. In a remote environment, you are not all noticing the problems at once, because you're all in different locations, in different places, in different houses, in different countries most of the time. So if someone notices a problem and they live in their house in Bulgaria and they see something, you live in their house in Paris and someone else lives in their apartment in New York, they're not going to notice the same thing because they're not together. They're not organically chatting around the coffee machine. So it is in that kind of environment, proactivity about, oh, I noticed something. This is what I propose to do. What do you think is... It's not a game changer. It is a game changer, but it's absolutely necessary.
No, it makes sense. I know the pros and cons. I can see also, we are also a remote company. So I can see, again, the pro of that. Sometimes when it comes to communication and finding, being on the same page can be a bit challenging sometimes. How long have you been in the marketing space?
23 years.
Tell me a bit about, what is happening, right? Because all the, marketing attribution lately, the cookies are going away, APIs from social media sometimes that removing access, changing things, algorithm all the time changes, new features. What are some of the trends that you observed last year that you either liked or something that was unexpected that, in the development either affected your company or yourself, positively or negatively?
Well, first of all, I'm going to talk for companies that are like mine, which is B2B, mid-market, type of business, targeting mid-market type of business. What I would share would be completely different for B2C or super SMB type of businesses. The thing I've learned in the past 2 years is that obviously everything that you can track digitally is going away, is eroding a little bit. Month after month, you track less and less and less, and what you see is more and more like an aggregate number, like you don't really know what it is made of. A lot of people I almost give up on that, and they say, okay, you can't do that anymore. It's not worth it, so let's not look at that, and let's do awareness and branding and communication and all those activities. The problem with that is once you hit a recession or tough times, like we are right now it's typical economy right now, the leadership and the exec team is going to look at all those activities and say, what are we actually getting from that? And if you cannot have a strong, hard answer, you're going to get laid off. That's all good. That's all that's going to happen to you. And I think this is not the right approach. I think the right approach is, what can we do to actually have a measurement of success and put that into place? I can tell you what it was for us and what it is for us right now. It's quite heavy in terms of the amount of work that we have to put into it, but it's quite necessary. Everything the marketing does goes through a very thorough process, where all the lead that we gather, all the webinar signups, all the online events, everything we do has to go through a very rigorous process where we first go through them and eliminate, like we eliminate the trash. What's the trash? The trash is the Gmails and the Hotmails and the emails, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 at mymymymy.com, all that eliminated. And usually it gives you, okay, we had 1,000 on the top, and then once we eliminate the trust, we have 600 left. Okay, we have a 60% conversion rate from sign up to data I can identify. I can know who the person is, and I can know what company they work for. Again, B2B, mid-market, you need that. If you don't have that, you're lost, and you can't do anything with the data. Second step is, okay, we have our ICPs. Our ICPs are, let's say, retail companies with more than 50 locations in North America or in Western Europe, or hospitality hotels, same thing, more than 20 locations, blah, blah, blah. And you ask, and all of that, the cleanup can be done by a mix of a VA. You can hire VAs in India, in Pakistan, in Philippines. Many of them are amazing. They do an amazing job, and they do it for an amount of money that's great for them, but that's affordable for you. So you can actually do that kind of work with them. And if you train them well, they can absolutely do that pretty well. And the second step is basically training them on who your ICPs are, who your ideal customers are, and say, okay, go through that 600 people list that you just cleaned for me and eliminate everyone who is not a good fit considering the ICP that we're going after. Company size, too small, eliminate. country, not the right geo, eliminate. Vertical, we've never sold to. We absolutely have no idea. Not necessarily eliminate, but put tier two. Tier one has to be the people we know really well, the hotels, the retail, and so on and so forth. And job title of the person, is it the kind of people we usually talk to in the company? Yes or no? If it's a yes, it's tier one. If it's a no, it's tier two. And once you've done that, you move from 1,000 signups to 120, I'm inventing numbers here, 127 real opportunities that are exactly the kind of person we usually talk to, working for exactly the kind of businesses. And here's the conversion rate of our marketing efforts that we can then provide to the SDRs. And then the SDRs can work these leads up. What happened before, in my company at the very least, is that marketing would take those 1,000 signups and would give them to the SDRs and say, hey, here's a bunch of leads, have fun with them. And they kept complaining and say, no, these are not qualified, you know. So that's what we've done in terms of qualifying. And that is the only way you can then work backward to the attribution and say, when we promoted this webinar or this online event, we bought LinkedIn ads and Google ads and Meta ads. And we also had a partnership with that media partner and that other media partner. And those sources, you have them because you have the UTMs and you have the links and you know where they're coming from. But now you also know how they convert. And now you can do attribution and ROI on the attribution and the channel. And that's the only way to do that, because before we had a fake or a false impression. Oh, that media partner is amazing because he got that many signups. When you start looking at the signups, and that offer was not great because the signups were really expensive based on what we paid. It was really expensive, but if it was really high quality, then it was worth the money. This one was cheap, but if it's all trash and crap, then it is not worth the money. So that's the big change that has happened to us, is not being afraid of putting on man hours behind the marketers have been used to just rely on dashboards and Google Analytics and HubSpot and Salesforce. And that's not enough. So if I had to summarize, the one big thing is dashboards are great, but they're not going to be enough if you don't invest the human time is actually looking at the data. And as a marketer, I think we should look at the data that we bring in. We shouldn't ignore it and send it to the software and then forget about it.
Hello. Is your brand ready to amplify its reach? Well, the Influencer Marketing Factory is here to do just that. We are a global influencer marketing agency helping brands ignite their growth, from influencer identification to campaign strategy, handling legalities and agreements to managing shipping and logistics. We have it all covered. We work with hundreds of brands across different verticals, from Fortune 500 companies to DTC brands. And we don't just stop there. With detailed ROI analysis, we help brands like yours measure success, transforming impressions into actionable conversions. You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com or just search the Influencer Marketing Factory on Google.
Yeah, but I agree 100%. We do the same, you know, like we look at the single, you know, lead that comes in, especially also in our case, B2B. But then we go back and we do the same, because you are exactly right. You can have like 100 leads, and maybe bringing you like, you know, $1,000 each, like, you know, the most. And then there is another channel, only 10 people maybe, but then the average, like, you know, half a million, right? And so that's why dashboards, I do agree, like they tell you, the quantitative data tell you only one part of the story, but then you want to go and see, is it the right person? How much is the average ticket they are buying in? And you can learn much more. What about social media instead? Where are you active on a daily basis? What do you like?
Me personally, LinkedIn. I gave up on everything else. And the only network I'm still active is LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. The reason is because I am so busy that I don't have time for social media for fun. Mm-hmm. So the only motivation for me to do social media is to do it for professional reasons, for a reason that's good for my business. And mm-hmm. LinkedIn is obviously the best place to do that. Now on the attribution and ROI on social media, which is one of the things that we are very passionate about, there's this myth that you cannot measure anything and social media is only about branding, which obviously is mostly true, because there's little you can track on social media natively, like almost nothing. Yeah. And also there's all the framework and the processes that the paid advertising platforms or the email marketing platforms and marketing automation platforms have used with their linking system, when everything is tracked and you can track any click and any visit and any conversion, that stuff has not been implemented on social media software, which is something we have done. Kind of filed a patent for that. If you're interested by how do you file a patent at the US PTO, I'm happy to give you a hint. And the idea here is to at least track what can be tracked. So you see a lot of people with, you know, link in bios on Instagram and TikTok, or some people sharing links on DMs or comments or posts. People should absolutely make sure that all these are being tracked. So what can be tracked and can be attributed to organic work on social media is actually tracked. And we have customers that generate, you know, $20,000 to $40,000 a month of sales directly attributed from their organic social media work. And it's absolutely amazing to witness. And I think social media should be considered as a channel like anything else, and not just, you know, an afterthought. Like, oh yeah, well, by the way, also post that on social media. It's too often that way.
Strategy, right? Yeah. Is there any examples? You just mentioned, you know, a few clients there that are like, you know, killing it. But is there anything that you noticed on social media, like, you know, a well done, you know, like exercise of, you know, technically speaking, how to set up something between, it could be social media, like as a business side, could be influencers and content creators. Is there anything that you noticed?
Yeah, two examples that come to mind. The first one is it's a very small business, an e-commerce business, very small business. I think it's less than 20 people, and they sell plant-based medication. And people who buy and cure themselves with plant-based medication, they're totally passionate about it. And they're usually very vocal about their choice because it's a philosophical choice. They don't want to get chemicals in their body. And that, as you can imagine, that's definitely a philosophical choice. Mm-hmm. And so they are an active community on social, and they usually help each other. And they're always on the lookout for the next plant-based thing. And if they have very specific and rare syndromes, they're trying to find information about stuff that can help them heal them. And that customer was a small company. They leverage a Facebook group and an Instagram profile. And what they do is they provide a ton of information on the symptoms, and they help them identify them. They help them making sure what it is, you know, making assessment of how could it be different, you know, how could different symptoms get to the same affection or disease. And so they just provide information and valuable data to patients and people who are affected by those health issues. But they are not selling anything in their post, and they're not selling anything in their stories. They do a lot of Instagram stories. But on the Instagram story, the call to action, if you want to learn more about solutions to this problem, to this issue, please DM us. That's the call to action. That's it. Not buy my stuff. DM me, and I'll, you know, if you need help, want to learn more, and so on and so forth, please send us a DM. That's the CTA of the story. And on the post, they don't put anything. They just go in the comment and they do the same thing. If you want to learn more and are interested about possible solutions for this affection, for this health issue, please let us know in the comments. And those, or click here and contact us or get in touch. And those are always leading to conversations. And inside the conversation, when engagement is happening and there is already trust that's being built, then they say, okay, here's the link. You can check it out. Here's the product if you want. But they've already provided the value. They've already provided all the answers to their questions. And only then do they send them to the e-commerce website and say, you can buy it here and it's $25 or whatever. And they are generating, I think it's 40 to 45K directly from those conversations every month, which for that business is quite significant. And again, not everything is tracked, because when you look at tracking stuff, whether it's on social or anywhere else, you will always be tracking the tip of the iceberg. You'll always be tracking what's visible. Let's say they go on their mobile and then they go in the browser, you lose them, right? iOS 14, you lose them. Yeah. They go home and they sit and tell their spouse, oh, you should check that out. It's interesting. And the spouse, but then their browser, you lose them. So it's always going to be the tip of the iceberg. But if you pardon my French, there's no tip, there's no iceberg. So if you cannot measure the tip of something, then there's probably nothing underwater. And I'd rather be navigating on the seas of marketing, knowing where my boat is going and seeing the tips and being able to navigate them, than not seeing where they are and randomly bumping into one. Oh, we got lucky today. We had an iceberg. So that's my philosophy on that.
No, I agree. And especially when there is, you know, the last touch attribution, right? There are 20 things happening, but there are many marketers like, oh, this one converted. It doesn't mean it was the one that actually converted. It's that maybe it was 20 times that after you saw it on TV, on a billboard, you saw it on social media, remarketing, all these, and then it touched on that one, and like, oh, this is the one that converted. No, it's part of the journey, and that's why multi-touch attribution usually says it's a good way to look at that, you know?
Totally, absolutely.
Anything else to add before wrapping up, anything that I didn't ask you or something else you are excited in the industry?
No, I think I shared the most. It's been a challenging time. I hope this challenging time is going to be behind us soon. I'm not sure it's going to be 2024, but if you're working on what matters, you know, what really matters and what's really the foundation, the fundamentals of your business and your customer's business, you always get through it and it always eventually works. So keep at it. Hang in there. It's going to be okay.
I agree 100%. Emek, thank you so much. Congratulations on what you built and for sharing all your knowledge with us today.
You're welcome, Alessandro. That was a pleasure for me.
This was the Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory. I'll see you next week.